So we've been doing a study on the kings of Israel and Judah. And when you look at these names, you know, we look at them individually, but a lot of times it's hard to keep them straight. So I put it side by side, and then we'll try to keep a little bit of a running list as we go. What you notice on the left-hand side of the list is, in general, you know, fewer names and longer times. Okay, well, that's very consistent with what the Lord says about blessing those that seek Him and judging those that don't, right? But we have on the kings of Judah, which will be on the left-hand side. The left-hand side will be Judah. You have Rehoboam and Abijam, and then Asa for 41 years. Okay, so during the time of Asa, he overlapped with 6 different kings of Israel, some of them longer, some of them shorter. But what we know is that the kings of Judah, which would be the list on the left, were up and down. There were godly kings on that side. All of them on the right-hand side, which would be the kings of Israel, all of them were idolaters. Okay, I did not put exact dates in here, but I tried to put them in approximately where they would overlap. It's not exact, but at least it gives us an idea. Okay, so we've looked at these names already in the course of our study: Jeroboam, Nadab, Baasha, Elah, Zimri, who lasted all of 1 week, Omri, who was the father of Ahab, and now today we're going to be looking at Ahaziah. So Ahaziah and Jehoram on the lower right. That's where we are. We looked at Jehoshaphat, and obviously sometimes there's overlap. We'll see some of that today. But anyway, Ahaziah is where we are now. So if you can follow the line down here, Omri is the father of Ahab, and then Ahab is the father of Ahaziah. I'll go ahead and mention this while I have it up here, okay, if I can get it zoomed in a little bit. But Ahaziah and Jehoram are actually brothers, okay? Ahaziah only reigned 2 years, and the Bible says that he had no son when he died. So Jehoram was his brother who became king then after his brief time as king, okay? There, Jehoram, if you take out the E-H in his name, he is also sometimes called Joram, which makes it that much more fun to keep it straight. And over here on this side, in the line of Jehoshaphat, there's also a Jehoram who was called Joram. So there was a Jehoram in the north, and there's a Jehoram in the south. Well, if you do a search on the name Ahaziah, you're going to find out that there's an Ahaziah later on down as well. I mean, right now we're going to be in 1 Kings 22 and 2 Kings 1. When we get down to about 2 Kings 9, there's another Ahaziah that's further down the line. So, you know, if you just read through it, oh, yeah, I think I've seen this name. There's a lot of overlap, which makes it much more fun, in quotes, you know, fun, to try to keep it all straight. But we're doing the best we can here, okay? So that's where we are as far as the timeline on the kings of Judah. And Israel, all right? This is more of a timeline look. The blue would be the prophets, and then the yellow or orange, whatever color that looks like on your screen, would be the kings, all right? So I can't zoom in any more than that, but we are right in this range here as far as the timeline. If you notice up here, the blue lines here, that's Elijah and Elisha. And we're going to see some of that overlap today as well. All right, so now, all of that being said, Ahaziah, let's look at 1 Kings 22. We're right on the edge of 1 and 2 Kings. 1 Kings 22, beginning of verse number 41. Jehoshaphat, the son of Asa, began to reign over Judah in the fourth year of Ahab. Jehoshaphat was 30 and 5 years old when he began to reign. He reigned 20 and 5 years in Jerusalem, and his mother's name was Azubah, the daughter of Shilhah, and he walked in the ways of Asa his father, and turned not aside from it to the right, from doing that which was right in the eyes of the Lord. Nevertheless, the high places were not taken away. Verse 45, now the rest of the acts of Jehoshaphat and his might that he showed and how he warred, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Judah? So we've talked about Jehoshaphat already. But look back at verse number 40. So Ahab slept with his fathers, and Ahaziah, his son, reigned in his stead. All right, now, jump over to verse 51. So Ahaziah, the son of Ahab, began to reign over Israel and Samaria in the 17th year of Jehoshaphat. All right, this is the way Old Testament history works a lot of times. I mean, we would deal with, all right, what happened in 2010? And let's just deal with that with a bunch of names. What happened in 2012? And deal with that with a bunch of names. We would tend to go in chronological order. Old Testament history tends to follow people. And they'll a lot of times tell the story of one person completely, and then they back up to another person, so they're kind of backing up on the timeline to where it overlaps. Okay? It's exactly what you see here in 1 Kings 22. You have a mention of Ahaziah and then 9-10 verses on Jehoshaphat, and then we pick up with Ahaziah again. So anyway, there in verse 49, Ahaziah is mentioned as overlapping with Jehoshaphat, and we'll mention that again. But verse 51, Ahaziah the son of Ahab began to reign over Israel and Samaria the 17th year of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, and reigned 2 years over Israel. And he did evil in the sight of the Lord and walked in the way of his father and in the way of his mother. All right, so what was the lineage of Ahaziah? His father and mother are whom? Well, we're told in verse 51, Ahaziah was the son of whom? Ahab. So who's his father and mother? Ahab and Jezebel, okay? And we're told here then that he walked in the way of his father and his mother. Now, when we talked about Ahab, we emphasized the statement that is made in the scriptures that there was Jezebel, his wife, stirred him up to worship Baal, and he was more fervent in the worship of Baal than anybody that had come before him. Okay? So he's following in the line of Ahab and Jezebel as Baal worshipers, and it seems like, you know, Ahab and Jezebel made Baal the predominant false god. But notice what he added back in at the end of verse number 52, and in the way of Jeroboam the son of Nebat, who made Israel to sin. So, I mean, what his lineage, he's the son of Ahab, his upbringing, he's raised as a worshiper of Baal in the household of Ahab and Jezebel. All right, that's not great training, but it doesn't have to be automatic. All right, we're told here in verse 51 that he reigned 2 years over Israel. Now, very often these numbers are rounded up. Okay, if he reigned, you know, 15 months, you know, sometimes it would be like 2 years because it was a whole year and part of a second one. Okay, but it was very short reign. He reigned only for 2 years. And then we see here already in verse number 52, what was his primary characteristic? He walked in the ways of his father and mother and in the ways of Jeroboam. What was the primary sin that Jeroboam introduced? All right, that's where I'm looking for an answer from you. This is Sunday school. Okay? What was the idolatry that Jeroboam introduced? All right, when the Bible talks about the way of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, what are we talking about? Jeroboam was the very first king after the split. And he said, if they go down and worship in Jerusalem, they're going to want to put the country back together. So what idolatry did Jeroboam introduce to keep them from returning? The calves, the golden calves, okay? He made two. He put one in the southern part of his kingdom, one in the northern part of his kingdom. And he said, it's too much for you to go down to Jerusalem. Worship of convenience, user-friendly, seeker-sensitive, whatever term you want to use. It was there with Jeroboam. But anytime you have these references to he followed in the way of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, that's referring back to the golden calves. Okay, now, very often calf worship was associated with Baal. There were two or three symbols that history and archaeology tell us were associated with Baal, and the cow or calf was one of them. It seems like, you know, Ahab took that calf worship and then redirected it towards, you know, that as being a symbol of Baal. But here, he was an equal opportunity idolater, if I could say it that way. He embraced the Baal worship of his parents, and he reinstituted the calf worship that was had a historical precedent in his kingdom. Okay? So, verse 53, he served Baal and worshiped him and provoked to anger the Lord God of Israel according to all that his father had done. Okay? So, now that rolls us right over into 2 Kings chapter 1. Then Moab rebelled against Israel after the death of Ahab. All right, we talked about that a little bit with the battles with Jehoshaphat, or under Jehoshaphat, and some of the battles he was involved in. That's just kind of a summary statement. Verse 2, Ahaziah fell down through a lattice in his upper chamber that was in Samaria and was sick. Now, that's interesting. It just says he was sick. I mean, when we think of sick, we think of, you know, a lot of times more of a disease or maybe an internal condition or something. I mean, maybe there was, I mean, if he fell down through the lattice, I'm wondering, you know, if it was broken bones. Maybe he got a bad cut that wasn't healing. I don't know exactly what it was, but this was a pretty serious situation. He was sick, and he felt like, you know, he needed an answer. Ahaziah fell down through a lattice in his upper chamber that was in Samaria and was sick, and he sent messengers and said unto them, go, inquire of Baal-zebub, the god of Ekron, whether I shall recover of this disease. Now, Ekron. Anybody remember? I mean, I'm sure you've heard that name, you've read it before, but does anybody remember the connection? Ekron was a city of who? What people? Oh, Brother Mark, I almost called on you there. You moved your hand, and I thought you were volunteering to answer there. So, all right. Ekron was one of the five royal cities of the Philistines, right? Ekron, Gath, you know, and that was when, you know, way back in 1 Samuel, when they stole the Ark of God on the battlefield, that was one of the cities that was plagued by God when they had stolen the Ark, when Eli's sons took it to the battlefield. But anyway, so Baal-zebub would have been the particular version of Baal there at Ekron. Go inquire of Baal-zebub, the god of Ekron, whether I shall recover of this disease. Verse 3. But the angel of the Lord said to Elijah the Tishbite, arise, go up to meet the messengers of the king of Samaria, and say unto them, is it not because there's not a god in Israel that you go to inquire of Baal-zebub, the god of Ekron? So now here we see him being rebuked by Elijah. That's a very interesting question, isn't it? Is it not because there is not a God in Israel that you go to inquire of Baal-zebub? Is that a rhetorical question? Was there a God in Israel? I mean, God is omnipresent, so in that sense we could say yes. Why does this seem like kind of an obvious question? Was God's presence known generally in Israel? No. I mean, from the time of Jeroboam, you know, all the way down that right-hand column that we had up there a few minutes ago, Jeroboam immediately said, I've got to do something to keep him from going to Jerusalem, and he introduced idolatry. All of the kings after Jeroboam kept the idolatrous worship with the calves. In some cases, they added Baal or other things to it. But we're talking about, at this point, you know, 100 years down the line from Rehoboam. I mean, if you remember the timeline there, Asa was 41 years, Jehoshaphat was 25 years, so that's 65. Then you had another 20, so we're at 85. So, I mean, we're talking, you know, 85 to 100 years down the line after the death of Solomon. So for 80 years, there has been no public worship of God in the northern kingdom, in Israel. So is there a God in Israel? I mean, in the sense, yes. And God had taken Israel for his possession. But in another very real sense, practically speaking, there wasn't a God of Israel. They had ignored him. Another interesting connection here to me is that all of the false gods, you know, had a geographical connection in the minds of the heathen. their statements in Joshua and Judges and Samuel along through there. But in the book of Joshua and Judges, when they were trying to conquer the land, and in Samuel and Kings, when there's different battles, do you remember this statement where the heathen said, oh, well, you know, their gods were gods of the hills, but then, you know, let's fight them on the plains, and, you know, we'll be their gods aren't gods of the plains, so let's fight them on a different territory. You know, there was very much a heathen mindset that a god belonged to an area. And that even was part of the discussion. We haven't quite gotten there yet, but a little bit later in 2 Kings, when Naaman gets cleansed of his leprosy, and he said, can I have two mules' burdens of earth to carry back with me? You ever wondered what in the world did he want that dirt for? Well, in the pagan mindset, a god belonged to a location, and the god was supposed to be worshipped, you know, in his spot. So in essence, he said, I want dirt from this god's land so I can build an altar on that dirt and please that god. That was part of his pagan mindset, that a god was to be worshipped, you know, on that location, or, you know, in essence, I'm going to carry dirt away to strengthen that connection because he's the god of this place. I mean, he's learning. He's a new convert, if we could say it that way. And, you know, Elisha didn't try to straighten all of that out immediately. But very likely he's going to take that dirt and use that as the foundation for his altar that he would build to worship the God of heaven. But anyway, the point is that the pagans had a mindset that a god was a god of a location. So that you, in that context, when Elijah asked this question, is there no God in Israel? Do you have to go somewhere else? That would make sense, right? Well, in fact, you know, the God of heaven was not being worshipped here in Israel. So verse 4, now therefore thus saith the Lord, thou shalt not come down from that bed on which thou art gone up, but thou shalt surely die. And Elijah departed. That's very abrupt. All right, this is, all of you that have been to doctors and hospitals, you know that the message may not change, but bedside manner makes a difference, doesn't it? The doctor can deliver the message in a kind way, or at least, you know, show some compassion or understanding, or they can just, you know, slap you in the face with it and leave. That seems to be the approach here from Elijah. Bam, see ya. You know, that's kind of the way this comes across. He just shows up and says, what are you doing going to Baal, to Ekron, to inquire of Baal? Is that because there's not a God here? Obviously, God was there. Elijah was his representative, but they were ignoring him. Okay, so now you go back and tell the king that sent you, he's not getting off that sick bed. He's going to die of this sickness. See ya. And he turns around and leaves. Now, put yourselves in their shoes for a minute. Okay, Brother Jim, just assume that you're the messenger that's been sent by Ahaziah, and he's expecting it's going to take you however many hours or days to get to Ekron and come back. You know, you're on your way to Ekron. Elijah shows up and says, here, go tell Ahaziah what God said. You turn around and go back. What's Ahaziah going to say when you walk back in? What are you doing here already? Why are you back early? All right, and that's in essence what happens here. Verse 5, when the messengers turned back unto him, he said, why are you now turned back? What are you doing here? I sent you to Ekron. You have not had time to go and get an answer and come back yet. Verse 6, and they said unto him, there came a man up to meet us and said unto us, go, turn again unto the king that sent you and say, thus saith the Lord, all caps, the proper name of God, is it not because there's not a God in Israel that thou sendest to inquire of Beelzebub, the God of Ekron? Therefore thou shalt not come down from that bed on which thou art gone up, but shalt surely die. What do you think, Brother Joe? You going to be real excited to stand in front of Ahaziah and deliver that message? Not at all. What are you doing here? I'm so sorry, sir, but this man showed up and this is what he said. And by the way, he said you're going to die. No, please don't shoot the messenger, right? There's a fault, but that's exactly what's going on here. Verse number 7, he said unto them, what manner of man was he which came up to meet you and told you these words? And they answered him, he was an hairy man. All right, now that lets me out. Okay, I won't tell you how long it took me to grow this. But there's a reason I pretty much keep it to this, because the rest of it doesn't fill in all that well. Okay, but you know, some guys can just grow a beard better than others, right? Some, you know, it seems like that kicks in early. I mean, they're occasionally you get the kid that's 17 and in high school and he has to shave twice a day, right? Elijah apparently had, you know, more of that type of characteristic. He was a hairy man. I mean, just like Esau. You remember the story of Esau? His brother put goat skin on his arms and dad felt his arms and thought it was Esau. I mean, that's a hairy man. Okay. So he was a hairy man and girt with a girdle of leather about his loins. Now, I have a girdle of leather today. I mean, we call it a belt. Okay. Most of the men here do. Okay. But apparently that was not a common accessory for everybody. You know, the girdle of leather, maybe not as common, maybe, you know, a fabric type belt. To have a girdle was very common to hold that, whether to hold the robe together if it overlapped, or just simply, you know, you tie it on there and then, you know, like a tool belt or whatever, you got a place to stick stuff. But this was characteristic. He said he was a hairy man and girt with a girdle of leather about his loins. And he, that's Ahaziah, said, "It is Elijah the Tishbite." So apparently that was his uniform. That was how he was known. I mean, interesting question. If, you know, how, if, is there a description that it was like, oh, they looked like this, you know, they had this color hair and they were wearing this. Oh yeah, that's Susan Ivan. It had to be, right? You know, oh yeah, dressed like that. What did you say? He had a wallet made out of duct tape. That had to be Doc Scovel. Okay, you know. What this was different than the norm of the day, okay? This was Elijah just eccentric enough that he just did that and didn't care? Was this part of a uniform that he had adopted? I don't know, but he was known by this. What does this tell us about Ahaziah and Ahab, though? Ahaziah and Elijah. What does that tell us? They knew each other. Ahaziah knew that Elijah was a prophet of the Lord, the God of heaven. He knew Elijah was there, but he did not ask for an answer from God through Elijah. He is willfully, intentionally ignoring God to seek to Baal. Okay? So he's rebuked by Elijah, okay, for his idolatry. And by definition, for his failure to seek God. That's in essence what verse 3 means. Is it not because there's not a God in Israel that you go to inquire of Beelzebub, the God of Ekron? In other words, you're refusing to seek God, and you're choosing to seek Baal. That's what he's saying. So Elijah rebukes him for his idolatry, for his failure to seek God. In other places in Kings and Chronicles, we read this statement. I believe it was Rehoboam. It says, Rehoboam did evil because he prepared not his heart to seek the Lord. Okay? In other words, it requires a choice on our part to seek the Lord. Okay? We can do evil simply by doing nothing, but it is a sin not to seek the Lord. So here, he knew who Elijah was. He knew who he represented. And he knew that he could have sought the Lord God of heaven if he wanted to. So, verse 8, they answered, "He was a hairy man, girt with a girdle of leather." And he said, "It is Elijah the Tishbite." Verse 9, "Then the king sent unto him a captain of 50 with his 50. And he went up to him, and behold, he sat on top of a hill." Elijah wasn't hiding, was he? He was there in a public place. "And he spake unto him, Thou man of God, the king hath said, come down." Now, if Ahaziah just wanted to have a friendly chat, who's he sending? A messenger, maybe two or three representatives. Who did he send? A captain and 50 soldiers. This seems a lot more like an arrest warrant, doesn't it? This is not a friendly visit. This seems a lot more confrontational. The king says, get over here. Verse 10, Elijah answered to the captain of the 50, "If I be a man of God, which that's how he was addressed in verse 9, thou man of God. Verse 10, if I be a man of God, then let fire come down from heaven and consume thee and thy 50. And there came down fire from heaven and consumed him and his 50. I mean, that would be terrifying and really cool all at the same time, right? It would. I mean, it's terrifying that it could happen to me, but as long as it's not happening to me, it's like, ooh, yeah, fire, you know, victory. That sounds cool. But all 50 of the soldiers and the captain were consumed. Who told the king? You ever wonder about that? What does the next verse say? He sent some more people. But who told the king? All right, Jeremy, are you volunteering for that mission? Yeah, I don't think so. You know, who wants, you know, it's like here people are watching, and here's Elijah, and he says, the king says, you get over here now. And he said, well, if I'm a man of God, let's have fire from heaven to consume all of you. Okay, who went back and told the king? Now, me personally, I'm like, I do not want to deliver the king bad news. But you know, there was somebody that wanted to be first. There are always those people. You know, news is good or bad, they just want to be the first one to tell you. You know, I don't repeat gossip. So listen up, I'm only going to say this once. No, that's not a right philosophy, but that seems to be some people's method of operation, right? But somebody went and told the king. What you see here, he's rebuked, but I think we see here an arrogance on the part of King Ahaziah. Because who called down fire? Elijah called down fire from heaven, but ultimately who sent the fire from heaven? God did. How did Ahaziah respond? I'm not putting up with that. All right, you take your 50 and you go bring me Elijah. That's an arrogant response. All right. And my connection apparently has frozen because it did not advance on the screen there, even though it advanced on here. I don't know if it's advancing on the live stream or not. But anyway, sorry for conducting business in the middle of Sunday school. But he, in arrogance, just says, all right, you go get him. Now, I don't know if the second guy had any second thoughts or he just thought, yeah, he should have sent me to start with. I mean, I don't know why, I don't know why he sent Bruce Love. I mean, he should have known I'm a better soldier. Me and my guys and I will take care of it. I mean, that's the way it works sometimes. And so the second guy goes, and what happens? Verse 11, again, also he sent unto him another captain 50 with his 50, and he answered and said unto him, O man of God, thus the king has said, come down quickly. Now we added something, right? In verse 9, it says, thus saith the king, come down. In verse 11, thus saith the king, come down quickly. There's not a proper response here on the part of the king. He sent another 50 and said, no, you get over here now. All right, now you've had those conversations with your children more than likely. Okay, you do this. You do it now. You know, and that's kind of what's going on here. This is still an arrogant response on the part of Ahaziah. Verse 12, Elijah answered and said unto him, if I be a man of God, let fire come down from heaven and consume thee and thy 50. And the fire of God came down from heaven and consumed him and his 50. Oh yeah? I'm the man of God, huh? Well, if I'm the man of God, let's see God show his power. Let's have fire from heaven and you guys are gone too. I mean, you have to know there was a crowd, right? I mean, rubbernecking after a car accident is not a new phenomenon. I mean, when the word got out about these people getting fried with fire from heaven, what's happened? People are coming out to see what's going on. And when they see the next one, they heard, here comes 50 more. You know what they're doing? They're not following too close, but they're following. They're watching. And it's like, oh, let's see. Here it goes. Yeah. You know, that's what's going on here. You know there were teenage boys that were doing that. Okay? You know there were moms going, get away from there. They might get on you. They might get you too. People are people. They always have been. Okay? But you know after the first one, there are people watching. And here he says, same deal. If I'm the man of God, let's have fire from heaven. Boom. Who went and told King Ahaziah this time? I don't know, but I'm not volunteering. One, I'm not volunteering because it's not generally a good idea to bring the king bad news. For two, I don't want to be anywhere around for him to send me next, right? So what happens? Verse 13, he sent again a captain of the third 50 with his 50. All right, how many people have died so far? 102. Very good. Okay, 50 plus the captain. So 51 in each group, 102 have already died. This guy's seen it. Verse 13, he sent the third captain, and the third captain of 50 went up and came and fell on his knees before Elijah and besought him and said, O man of God, I pray thee, let my life and the life of these 50 thy servants be precious in thy sight. Behold, there came down fire from heaven and burn up the two captains of the former 50s with their 50s. Let therefore my life now be precious in thy sight. And the angel of the Lord said unto Elijah, go down with him, be not afraid of him. That phrase right there, be not afraid of him, is why I think the earlier groups were an arrest warrant or even, you know, an execution squad kind of an idea, all right? He knew they came to cause him harm, and he called down the fire of God from heaven. But here the Lord said, be not afraid of him. Notice the two different approaches. On the part of Ahaziah, there's arrogance. On the part of this third captain, what was his attitude? Say it louder. Humility. Yes. Okay. Is that not what the New Testament said? God does what to the proud and does what to the humble? God resists the proud and gives grace to who? The humble. You see an illustration of that here, don't we? Okay. God says, all right, yeah, you go with him. Was that normal behavior on the part of a soldier? A soldier being sent on business from the king with his men and his weapons and all of that, what would the normal attitude be? You know, one of bravado, one of authority, right? Okay, hey, no, the king says, let's go. But he humbled himself. He said, please, I'm just doing my job. The king sent me. I don't want to die. Would you please take it easy on us? And God says, all right, go with him. God resists the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. And then we see the judgment of God here. Verse 16, and he said unto him, thus saith the Lord, forasmuch as thou hast sent. So now who is Elijah? Who's speaking to who? This is Elijah. When he says, thou hast sent, who's being addressed here? Ahaziah, the king. Okay, so between 15 and 16, we fast forwarded, and we've got to the point where Elijah is standing there in front of Ahaziah. And he said unto him, thus saith the Lord, for as much as thou hast sent messengers to inquire of Beelzebub, the god of Ekron, is it not because there's no God in Israel to inquire of his word? In other words, you've abandoned God. God's abandoned you. Therefore, thou shalt not come down off of that bed on which thou art gone up, but shalt surely die. That required some courage on the part of Elijah, didn't it? To stand in front of the king and say, you're going to die. That required some courage, but Elijah did it. Okay? Verse 17, so he died according to the word of the Lord which Elijah had spoken. And Jehoram reigned in his stead in the second year of Jehoram, son of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, because he had no son. So he heard the message, God fulfilled it, and then his brother followed him. All right, now you can't see it. I don't know if they can see it on the live stream or not, but it's not advancing up here, even though I'm advancing it. But very quickly, I thought I had plenty of time because the clock froze on the back screen too, but we got just a couple minutes left. Okay, lessons from the life of Ahaziah. What lessons, what practical applications can we see from the life of Ahaziah? Did God judge Ahaziah because Ahab worshipped Baal? God judged Ahaziah because Ahaziah worshipped Baal. Each generation must make their own choice. If your daddy's a preacher, that doesn't mean you're going to turn out right. And if your daddy's a drunk, that doesn't mean you can't serve God and have God's blessing. Each generation must make their own choice. And we have to communicate that to our children and grandchildren, you know, as the Lord directs. Lesson number two, idolatry will not go unpunished by God, although the timeline of judgment is known to him alone. Why did God give Ahab 22 years before he finally killed him? And he only gave Ahaziah 2 years or less. God knows. Did God judge Ahab? Yes. Did God judge Ahaziah? Yes. God will always judge idolatry. He will always judge sin. It just doesn't work on our timeline. Okay? And I've already mentioned this one as we were talking about the two groups of 50, but I think this is an important lesson for us to remember from the life of Ahaziah. God resists the proud, and he gives grace to the humble. The two captains of 50 that approached with pride and arrogance were judged. The one that approached with humility received mercy. All right? So is there something to be learned from this bad king? Yeah, absolutely. Any observations you have that you would add to those? That was my list to get it started. Any observations you have that you would add to that? Life lessons from the life of Ahaziah. Okay? So 2 years, and then he's going to be followed by his brother, Jehoram. Which, by the way, it's still going to be family of Ahab, and it's still going to be, you know, idolatrous. But here in the beginning of the book of 2 Kings, we start to get people. We're not as familiar with Ahaziah and Jehoram as we are with Elijah and Elisha, right? But we're going to start to see some of these other familiar stories from Elijah and Elisha overlap as we talk about the kings, all right? It's time for us to quit. Let's close in a word of prayer this morning. Thank you, Lord, for your word.